thank you for joining us for episode 8 of the Gestalten podcast. My name is Eric, and I am here with my colleague
Martin. Hello, hello.
Hello, everyone. So, this episode, we've got quite a lot of things to talk about because we're in the run-up to Paris. There's a lot of interesting things happening, but most recently, Martin, you were at a very interesting event this past weekend.
Yes, I was indeed. For the people who are listening to this in, let's say, California, this is nothing new to you. It's an event called Luftgekühlt, which translates into air-cooled, and it's a pretty much it's a meetup of Porsche enthusiasts with air-cooled Porsches. This was actually the second meeting they had in Europe. The first one was in England, but it's the first one in the homeland of Porsche, and it happened here in Munich. And obviously, I couldn't resist of going. I went with a bunch of friends, and what's not to like about a Sunday, a sunny Sunday morning here in Munich with a little bit of beer and some really, really nice Porsches.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, that's pretty much why all of us are in this business. I mean, not for Porsches exclusively, but because we all have a passion for cars, and events like those, honoring an icon in automotive history and just the general car design culture are fantastic events. I mean, and yeah, Californians, as you say, are quite familiar with things like that. But you did actually see a few things that were unique and that were obviously personalized because that's what this event's all about. But you also mentioned that seeing a singer for the first time. What was your take on seeing that in the middle?
I didn't even know that there was one. It was literally just wandering around, and like I said, I was with a bunch of friends, and we were like, "Oh, there's a singer!" Like, "Whoa, what's that thing doing here?" it happened to be an English registered one, and apart from the rear, I mean, this was the first thing for me that really jumped into my eye. I wasn't really 100% sold on how they solved the rear. It was probably one of the nicest Porsches I've ever seen, and obviously definitely in the top three in that kind of event on Sunday. Very, very impressive. And especially, we were joking a little bit about in the group over there saying just like, oh, it's a bunch of the same car and everybody's going mental about it. Like, what's going on? But but it was absolutely fantastic. The singer was very, very enjoyable. Obviously, there were quite a few people around it as well. It was a white one. I would say it was probably one of the earlier ones that they did very, very interestingly. But, there were a bunch of roof Porsches. The actual very, very first prototype of a Porsche was there as well as a replica, original one from the Porsche Museum, but as a replica that came from Austria, but it was drivable. That was really, really cool. As mentioned, I think in total it was 3 roof cars. I think the maximum I saw on one stand or something like that was in Geneva, where there were 2, and there were, there were actually 4 in total. I'm sorry. 4 roof cars in total. Ooh. And, the Steve McQueen, Porsche that he drove for one of the movies that they filmed over there, where he finished 9th. And there was a Carrera 6 as well, which was absolutely fantastic. Nice. So one does have to say, whatever you think about Porsches, and, regular listeners of the podcast will find out that, or will know that I'm not a major fan of Porsche, but the whole environment was just absolutely fantastic. There was a lot of graffitis around. What you have to say is just the location to, take pictures was absolutely fantastic. I mean, even for, the lowest level of photography that you can think of, there were great motifs there. And I'm pretty sure if you check on Instagram in particular, you will see some absolutely fantastic shots of that event. And that was really what made a lot of fun, is that they really made it for the people. They put the cars in a really, really nice location. And, a very big congratulations to the guys from Luftgekühlt, because great choice of location, great bunch amount of cars over there. And also it was just a bunch of chilled people. So it was overall a really, really cool event. And everybody I spoke to, they were hoping that they come back very, very soon.
Yeah, nice, nice. Yeah, I always love events like that. I mean, like I said, that's, what we're all into it about. That's why we're all here working in this industry, is because we generally have a passion for cars be it large, small, Porsches, whatever. And just getting those get-togethers are really important, I think,
exactly,
for all of us. So let's move on into something that is a bit more kind of mainstream,
or a bit newer in that sense. I mean, this is one. It has to kind of, you know, nowadays I think this is one of our favorite parts of the podcast when we talk about the new cars, and in particular, you know, we're very, very close, about 2 weeks before the Paris show, and we have seen a bunch of concept cars actually being revealed before the Paris show in separate events. Let's start actually before we talk about production cars, which is going to be very interesting anyways, but let's talk about concept cars and let's start talking about the BMW, because we saw some teasers. We talked about the, you know, the kind of front in the last podcast a little bit, but now we've seen the full car. We've seen pictures of the car and we were quite skeptical. And how are we feeling about it
now? Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, when I first saw the snout, which was one of the early kind of re-leaked pictures, you know, it was like a still frame from the video that BMW released. And I was definitely not convinced on that concept from that perspective. And I'm still not. I still think they could do better from a front face. I mean, that's what you see, you know, coming at you down the road. And you know, I've heard it anywhere described from anything between like a chipmunk to a pig snout. I mean, it's just none of it favorable. I really am not a big fan of where they're going with that, you know, front end treatment and that grill, that, you know, how narrow it is, how tall it is. I didn't like it on the last concept that was shown over in Frankfurt last year, and I don't like it on this thing. But that said, I still do think that the concept itself has a lot of very interesting design elements, particularly from an interior perspective, from a detail perspective. So, yeah, I mean, I was actually pleasantly surprised by what it is that they put out, save the front face, which I think is, you know, quite frankly, an abomination. It's a shame because BMW has always been so recognizable in that front end identity. Yeah. And they've just really, really steered far off course.
100% agree. I mean, you know what? I don't know why they stick to that weird color. I mean, we saw that on the Vision 100 of BMW. I'm just not a big fan, and I think it, you know, it doesn't really show, you know, as much as you would have hoped, at least in the press pictures that we've all seen. I agree very, very much on the front. Like, you know, this is the biggest disaster of the whole car. I think the actual body side is not that bad. It's quite a, you know, bit of a development of an i3, and it's definitely going into a little bit of a more modern approach and stuff like that. But oh my god, that front! I mean, you know what are those guys doing at the moment? Interior, it kind of continues to be a trend a little bit in terms of, you know, what we've seen over the past few months. Yeah. Interiors are generally getting very, very good, very, very interesting. I think they're playing around with them a lot in the sense of BMW, you know, could probably be a little bit more adventurous, but in general, very, very clean interior, very, very like a lounge style interior that we've seen a lot. But exterior, you know, as so often lately, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you with like the body side, the rear end, like the rear three quarter is probably the best view from my perspective on that car. I haven't seen it in the metal. The pictures that are very artsy, so they've got these weird reflections. It's like they're renderings; they're not actual photographs. So it's really hard to actually, you know, judge anything. I mean, everybody judges things by photos nowadays, but it's difficult to really get an accurate reading when something's not in front of you, you know, and especially under like natural light. But I think the exterior, you know, from a rear three quarter, from a side profile is okay. You know, it's decent. The interior, you know, is very much following along with the current BMW i design themes. You know, you've got two separate kind of screens, this very simple IP. Everything is very simple in the interior. But I think, you know, in terms of the technology, particularly this like Jacquard weave, where they have like interesting kind of, you know, light, you know, where you can write things into it and make certain movements within that, you know, material is something that's quite futuristic and quite interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I'll give it to BMW. In terms of like, you know, moving and I think it's quite progressive from that perspective, right? Obviously, it's still an SUV typology, which is what everybody's doing, which is very much on trend. You know, that's what people want. And that's where you get the most space, etc. I'm starting to get rather bored of these.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, what are you going to do?
And one thing, you know, just to kind of wrap this up with BMW, this is a very, very personal thing. We've seen this before. I think it was on the Vision Dynamics they've shown in Frankfurt. Is this kind of removing, you know, the kind of idea of the kidney grill or kind of the motive of the kidney grill into a window theme? If you look into the body side, you know, there's these kind of little on the B pillar. It looks like they want to put in the kidney onto the side motive as almost like a graphic. Not a big fan of that. It didn't really work in the Vision Dynamic. Doesn't really work over here. I understand, you know, it's really nice for them to try this out, and it looks all right in the sketches. But when you actually see it executed, not my favorite on this one. But you know. That's, you know, we'll see how BMW is going to develop. I mean, as we've mentioned before, this is again a Dukech car. Yeah, we still haven't seen a Kaban car, and I'm really, really interested to see, like, you know, what Josef Kaban has achieved with BMW once this first car is coming out. Hopefully, you know, very, very soon, maybe LA. That would be fantastic if they show something there. But definitely, very interested of seeing what Kaban has been up to. From that perspective. Mm-hmm. But let's move on. We go from BMW to another big one, which is Mercedes. But we don't want to talk about their car section this time. We actually want to talk about their commercial vehicles because they had a concept, what they called the Vision Urbanetic concept. And I have to say, I do love this idea. You know, design, you know, we can obviously discuss this in very much detail, but the whole idea behind it, I think, is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I've always liked the concept of a modular vehicle. You know, I think it's especially in terms of electric platforms where you've got all of the battery components and the drivetrain, everything within this kind of skateboard platform. You can pretty much do whatever you want in terms of the cabin above that. But, you know, it's while I think it's interesting, you know, I love the concept of having a truck or a car or whatever you want to put above it. It's not entirely, you know, new. It's not like, I mean, Mercedes did a good job showcasing their design language. It looks very similar to a lot of concepts that they've done in the past from a car perspective, be it Maybach, like back in the day, with this very fluid, very organic style top, which, you know, they've done in the past. And also with the concept, the cargo van concept, which is also quite appealing. But if you look back, I mean, you know, to shit, man, like 40 years ago, there was a car by Italo Design, by Giugiaro, that was called the Capsula. And that was pretty much the same idea, you know, a modular vehicle with a bunch of different adaptations that could be made to a personal vehicle, could be made into a fire truck, could be made into whatever that you wanted it to be, and an ambulance or tow truck or whatever. And, you know, I like that, you know, with a basic platform. And so it's not entirely a novel idea. You know, it's something that's been done and tested even by Fiat prior to Italo Design, I think. They came out with a similar style of modular type vehicle. So, you know, I like the idea. I do like the thinking behind it. I like the fact that, you know, they're thinking about potentially having one platform, which then you can put a whole range of different, bodies on it in order to suit. Yeah. Again, it's nothing new, and I'll get really excited once I see one on the road. You know?
Yeah, I think, you know, what a lot of those companies, and we're not talking about, you know, Mercedes just in particular, but we're talking about the general kind of idea, is, in my opinion, they're missing out on infrastructure integration. Yeah, because I think if you show this kind of concept, you have to come up with an idea in terms of, and you kind of, you know, get your potential customers or kind of people interested in what you're doing with it. And in particular with, you know, such a platform, almost like a skateboard model. Yeah, I think I've read that somewhere, like the skateboard and stuff like that. I did really, really enjoy that, because once you put something on there, almost on like a Lego style system, how does this how does this work in a futuristic environment? I mean, does everybody have a pod that then goes on top of that, and then you go to your office, or how does it work? I mean, show us the infrastructure. The actual idea of the platform, if you've mentioned, is something very, very simple. And I think it is something that everybody could come up with. But this kind of idea about the infrastructure, how this could, for example, incorporate a house or, a flat or something like that, or, can be picked, put two and two together in this kind of regards, also with logistics, that would be really, really interesting to see. And that's where I think, Mercedes missed out a little bit. I think they could have shown that idea a little bit in terms of what they wanted to do. But generally speaking, I mean, it looks good. From my perspective, I like that, how the platform looks and how it, keeps the design language of Mercedes going, even in such an, advanced concept. But they could have been a little bit more, just to kind of make it a little bit more let's say feasible for a future environment. But we'll see what they come up with. They have surprised us, but for me, this was one of the better concepts that they've shown recently. But let's move on,
yeah.
Because we're talking about, we didn't call this a toaster, but this definitely goes in line of this kind of, new generation that goes along with the Cedric, and it goes along with, with the Toyota 2020 Tokyo idea and stuff like that.
Yeah, also the e-palette as well. I mean, that kind of leads us into the next car, which is the Renault concept that was very recently revealed, the EZ Pro. Which is basically the same type thing, isn't it? If we're left to our own devices and we take the Mercedes and the Renault and we kind of look at it from a practical perspective, which is the story that Mercedes failed to tell. But if you take the EZ Go and now the EZ Pro, it's kind of the same, like a very similar idea in that it's a platform. And then you kind of put whatever, like the e-palette that Toyota showed at CES last year.
Yeah.
And you make of the cabin what you will. So I mean, if we're left to our own devices and we kind of imagine a future where, those platforms are kind of owned by the company and maintained by the company and autonomously moving around, you as an individual, as a customer, could potentially buy a pod or rent a pod that suits you, and have that developed and customized to your taste, which is, again, something that's very, very much on trend. And I will talk about that a little bit later. But it's something that, I mean, we just, every time that we record one of these podcasts, it seems like this is the trend that's just keeps going and getting stronger, is the personalization of one's kind of mode of mobility, and having that become like very much a part of them, and you mentioned earlier, part of their home dwelling, if you will, an extension of, which would then be used in the future.
Yeah.
So it's something that's really interesting. But going back into a bit more detail about the EZ Pro, what do you make of that, from a design perspective?
The first thing that I've, that I saw, and they had something very, very similar on the EZ Go, is just those kind of wheels, or, whatever they would, call them, the wheel arches or whatever you want. Guys, what the hell? Can you not come with something a little bit better? When I look into the pictures, and especially at the one that is pretty symmetrical, I do like that. It's simple. It very, very clearly shows, look, this is for logistics, or it's something, to transport a product from A to B. I like that. It looks reassuring. It looks safe to me. But the whole idea with that kind of wheels destroys the whole thing. We go from something that is very, very simple, that is, that has a lot of shape, it's quite round shapes, to going for a wheel area that is, just edgy. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. And it looks like they almost, they didn't have enough time to finish that whole thing. And it was a very, very similar thing for me at the Easy Go. That's why I never really got super warm with it. And from from a pure design perspective, this just, you know, doesn't make sense. And it makes it look from something that could actually be on the road in a couple of years' time to something that is just hideous. And, you know, comes from almost like, you know, a Blade Runner style or something that is just completely over the top, like a movie set, but not something that I can realistically see. Whereas most of the other parts of the design, you know, 80% of design is actually something that if I would see that on the road, it's like, oh, you know, that looks quite modern. I can live with that in our environment at the moment. So, yeah.
I get where you're coming from with the whole Blade Runner thing, but I think that's part of the appeal. You know, it is what makes it look futuristic. I think if they'd put, you know, slapped like four wheels on there, it would not be, you know, the same impact. I mean, you know, we have to remember this is a concept car, sure, right? So I think, you know, a lot of the ways that they treated the glass, for example, you know, like the front, like the windscreen, the way they integrated the lamps and the emblem into the front windshield of the vehicle, you know, and the Renault lozenge on the side that acts as the door handle, as it were. I mean, these are all things that, you know, having that cover over the wheel is something that is very much, you know, Blade Runner-like, like you say, you know, very much futuristic. And one of the things that I do like about that is how they integrated the lighting, mm-hmm. because it's not like, you know, it's kind of like that wheel cover then becomes the fender, then also becomes part of the lighting fixture. I think it's well done, actually, you know, so I'm going to have to disagree no, with fine. You in terms
the
of...
Thing is for me, the thing for me is, and I think, you know, this, if you... to all the listeners, if you look into the press pictures, and there's one that is particularly, you know, that makes me a little bit upset, is the one where they have the parcel service one.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's pretty much branded in, you know, from a perspective of that company, of that parcel delivery company. And when I see that, and it's pretty much, you know, if the wheels would be different or would be literally just not on this Blade Runner style, I would almost believe, you know, this could go out pretty much tomorrow. You know, I would not have a problem with seeing that kind of thing on the road tomorrow. That's just the thing for me. You know, I think they're trying to sell something just like, hey, this could come next year and stuff like that. And then we both probably disagree in the sense, you know, or agree in the sense that those wheels are very Blade Runner-ish or like, you know, very futuristic. So you're trying to sell it that it could come out next year. But I just don't buy it because of that kind of wheel system in that sense. And I think for me personally, and that's, I think, the biggest difference to the Mercedes one. The Mercedes one looks very futuristic. We all know this is not going to happen. There's much more infrastructure. The Renault thing, you know, in some kind of form, this could actually come out next year. Obviously, legislation and so on would have to approve all those things. But that's what I mean. That is my disappointment. Like I said, you know, it doesn't make sense in the whole picture. But if you want to, you know, sell something to me that shows pretty much everyday life and how we can approve it already nowadays, that's just my, you know, my two cents on that one. But again, I think in terms of the design strategy that Laurens van den Akker and all his team is moving into, I think this is the right step. You know, it's a refreshing kind of sign. And I really, really hope that they will be able to get something like this into production, because I think we can all be very, very honest. Renault has shown some absolutely fantastic concepts in the past.
Yes.
But they've lacked quite a bit on the production side. So, you know, if we can really move into that production level that they've shown on the concept levels, you know, I think we would be all very, very happy with that.
Yeah. I think it's always difficult to, you know, get that going, you know.
Yes, of course.
The initial steps, of course. But he has, you know, under van den Akker's leadership, Renault has really done quite significant forward strides in design, I would say. I mean, not that Patrick Vercamer wasn't. It was just, now it's just much more consistent. We see, you know, the Renault life cycle. I mean, even cars like the Clio are very appealing from a design perspective. You know, we've got the Scenic. I mean, all of these cars are very much of a family, and I really like the way that Renault is going.
Yeah.
But, so on that note, let's move into some production cars now, shall we?
Let's do this. Do you want to start with electric, or do you want to start with the beauty? You can choose on this one.
I'm gonna go with alphabetical. I'm happy for you to lead. Go ahead. You choose.
Look, I, you know, let's talk about beauty. Let's talk about beautiful cars for at least a little bit, because, you know, we will talk about electric cars for so often, but my God, those Ferraris that they've shown, you know, remember when we like last episode, when we discussed all these single seaters and we were just like, oh, you know, the Infiniti One, you know, is so clean. And, you know, then we look into our, you know, into our email inboxes and we look into like, you know, the general kind of websites that you look into. And we see those pictures of the Ferrari Monza SP1 and 2. Mm. And they're actually production cars. And they will be in a very, very limited series. Yes. And, you know, we've discussed limited series in the past. But my God, those are pretty, you know. They have really done a great job over there.
Yeah. You know, I like the SP2. I'm not a big fan of the SP1. I don't know. It just doesn't really speak to me. I understand the whole, you know, concept of going after, you know, the single seater, paying homage, et cetera, et cetera. For me, it's like, I don't understand the whole concept of, I mean, I do in a much greater sense understand the kind of romantic notion of having a single seat car. Yeah. You know, for the racetrack and what it could potentially mean in the future in terms of, you know, if the world goes autonomous and, you know, the car then becomes a horse or, you know, something like, you know, that you use just for pure leisure purposes, which obviously this is, you know, the SP1 certainly would fit into that category. But I mean, I'm not a big fan of, it's like, you know, yes, the surfacing is nice. Yes, the way, you know, the shut lines, it's all very harmonious and et cetera. But, you know, it's like, I don't really see, I don't know. I mean, you know, I like what Ferrari's done. This is way more kind of back to basics, very simple and pure. But it's also something that, you know, it's like, you know, you can, this is a Renault Spider in Ferrari dress up, you know. It's like, where's the innovation? Where's the... It's just the fact that, you know, yes, Ferrari can come out with some really cool cars that are going to be limited edition. And maybe that's what Ferrari is about nowadays, you know? It's about creating an aura where the cars that you see, you can't even buy because they're already gone. They're already sold out.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this, from a design perspective, yes, these cars are very nice. They're certainly... the romantic aspect of design, there's no question about that. You look at that and you're like, get me into one of those because I want to drive. And that, you know, that is exactly what Ferrari is and should be about, I guess, you know, and that is very much what these cars say to me about. Now, the SP2 is something that's a bit more practical, and that maybe it's because of the colorways, maybe, I don't know. There's something about that that really, really
I agree.
Hooks me. You know, I love that. I love that SP2. But the SP1, it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't understand why you would choose to have a Barchetta when you don't necessarily need the second seat, but who the hell wants to drive around by themselves all the time, you know?
I mean, sometimes you want to take
your buddy or, you know, I mean, let's try to keep a PC here, but sometimes you want to drive around with the pretty girl in the passenger seat or be a passenger with the pretty girl driving around, you know what I mean?
That's exactly it. And to be honest, I think where it lacks a little bit, especially on the SP1, is if you see, like, you know, how they covered the second seat pretty much, where the second seat in the SP2 is, that looks a little bit cheap. I think this looks a little bit just like, oh, you know, we need to find a solution to close it down. That's would probably be my biggest criticism of the SP1, but I agree 100%. SP2, absolutely fantastic. And I think the reason why it stands out so much is because it's the opposite of what we see with sports cars at the moment. It is not aggressive whatsoever. You know, there is beautiful surfacing over there. It's almost like if you look at it from the front, it's almost like a friendly face. You know, it's nothing on this kind of, oh, you know, I'm going to destroy you or whatever kind of attitude that we see nowadays with Astons, that we see with, you know, the AMGs and stuff like that, which is in the Lamborghinis in particular, but they've always been, you know, like that. This is it's a friendly car. It's really, you know, beautiful and friendly again to the eye, and that's what I really like about it. You know, it's almost just like Flavio Manzoni said, oh, guys, you know what? They're all becoming this kind of super aggressive, companies. Let's do something a little bit more back to basics. And we're going to be, almost like Spider-Man, your nice little neighbor from next door. And obviously, when we talk about money, that's a different story. But that's what I like about it, mm-hmm. And I think big well done to the guys over there at Ferrari, especially for the SP2. Beautiful. Also, the colors that they've chosen for those kind of pictures. Mm-hmm. And we will actually see the car in real life when we're in Paris. So I'm very, very, very excited for that. Have already confirmed that they're going to show it over there. So that's going to be cool. And I'm very, very likely, have some kind of quick chat about it when we talk about Paris later on, what we're going to do there. But let's move on. Let's move on to the Germans.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
We have seen Audi, finally, after it seems like the longest teasing period ever, showing the e-tron, and we shouldn't really be surprised, but it's a bit underwhelming, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to agree. The thing is, when you look at these types of vehicles, particularly the electric vehicle, we saw Mercedes do it recently with that other, whatever it was called, the first of the EQ range, EQC. Yeah. It's just, there's so much kind of, in my opinion, there's so much potential for, kind of moving the yardstick forward in electric vehicle design, and it just seems like it's not being done. Now, I keep kind of coming back to this. It's like, right, Tesla, which everybody loves, which is huge, just in my opinion, somewhat overrated, but it is a very, powerful performance car, but there's nothing really to write home about when you look at that car from a design perspective. Either model. The X even is like, I don't really like the way that looks flat out from a side profile perspective. But the Model S is a very nice looking car. I saw quite a few Model 3s when I was in California this summer, and that's not a bad looking car as long as you can get past the front face, because it's something that I don't like. But again, it's like none of those cars are rewriting anything. They're not pushing the design envelope in any way.
Yeah.
The Tesla Model S is arguably the best executed one, and it's the oldest one in the lineup. But when Mercedes comes out with EQC, when Audi comes out with e-tron, I don't know. It's like you expect maybe a kind of leap forward from a design perspective, simply because they have the capability to do that, which is why perhaps we feel a bit let down that they aren't pushing the envelope,
Yeah, and I think, the situation for me personally is you can kind of understand they want to build it on a platform that they already have. They want to minimize costs because they want to find out how do our customers and, users react to, our first electric car. I do very, very much understand that. But in particular, with this e-tron now with Audi, I remember when I first saw it, I think they had this kind of teaser car with this kind of weird camouflage decals in Geneva this year. Mm. And you were just like, man, this is just a Q5, <It's> just, and this is not even like, it doesn't need to be a, taken in a bad way, because the Q5 is not a bad car. But yeah. I think this kind of development that you would expect in terms of, what is the new e-platform. And I think they're also running a little bit against BMW, because BMW started i, and i was so different from the other models, is that we maybe all expected, if BMW does it, then Mercedes will do it, and and Audi will do it, and Volkswagen as well. But they have all moved towards the kind of slower strategy of saying we're using an existing platform and just change that a little bit. In terms of a financial or an economic way, I would say, that's fair enough. And I don't want to criticize them for that, because it's probably the right thing to do. In terms of design, it's just nothing special. And, if somebody comes up to me and says, just like, oh, but the side mirrors are now, pretty much cameras. It's like, Well, yeah, but that's not really a design innovation, because a design innovation would be to actually put it into the A pillar and, you know, make it almost invisible. That would be design innovation, and not the way they have it at the moment. No. So it's obviously complaining on a very, very high level for us, but quite a bit of a disappointment, because it was teased so, you know, so much. And in the end, it's an electric Q5, which is all right. I think everybody can live with that, but that's pretty much it, you know, not more, not less.
Yeah. No, they have a couple of interesting kind of steps forward, I would say, in terms of the interior. I don't know how much it differs from the existing Q5, but I think, you know, it's a bit cleaner, perhaps. Maybe has like more like lighting or elements. I don't know. I don't know how many changes there are physically from that. But you're right. I mean, from a mirror perspective, it's like it's very much a stopgap until, you know, they can get all of that into legislation, and then, you know, we'll start seeing things. Because let's face it, mirrors are probably one of the single biggest areas that impact aerodynamics.
Yeah.
So, you know, car designers are always looking for ways to really minimize their impact on just messing up the airflow around the vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, I entirely agree. You know, I'm left a bit feeling a bit lukewarm about this vehicle, because, you know, while I want to like it from a design or from a technological perspective, which I do, I want to like it from a design perspective, and it's just left me wanting a bit more. Anyway, on that note.
Last but not least, in the regards of production cars,
yes.
And I think we can make this fairly short. DS3 Crossback that was revealed, and let's say it, you know, we've had this discussion when you were last over here in Munich, of course, and you said, oh, there's not that many DSs around anyways. I would like to predict that probably this one is not going to change that.
Well, you know, it's, again, nothing really all that special, unfortunately. I really, you know, for a while, you know, DS was really doing well, in my opinion, where they carved out that, you know, specific personal identity, and they were going after, you know, luxury customers, and, you know, really trying to elevate the DS brand into remembering what original DS was, even though the market that they were primarily targeting had absolutely no idea what a DS was. So they have to like ship one over there every time they were doing some new launch. You'd always see an original like DS19 or whatever. But what's interesting about this brand is the graphics. I mean, you know, let's face it, China, you know, Korea, and the Asian markets in particular are huge on graphics. And the DS, like, actually, you know, they've managed to harness that quite well. So there's quite a lot of, like, interesting graphics on this car. I would definitely go for that, you know, and give it a plus in that regard. Now, you know, there's also some things where you're like, all right, you know, what is this kind of there for like the shark blade over the, you know, over the B pillar, things like that, you know, and I don't know, it's just kind of like styling in excess, really unnecessary, which is a shame, because, you know, otherwise I think it could be a nice little car. But like I said, the other time when we were driving around and I saw a DS on the road in Germany, which I don't ever see, I honestly thought it was a Chinese car. And, you know, it's clear, like, where the market that they're targeting. And I don't really think, you know, from a marketing perspective, from a kind of design, you know, product perspective, I don't think that's what Chinese people necessarily want. I think what Chinese customers really want, and I think why they were buying into the DS brand and the Citroën brand in the first place, is they wanted Frenchness. They wanted the Louis Vuitton bag, you know. And now it seems like DS isn't giving that to them. It's instead giving them what they think they want. And that is, that's a shame, because I don't know if it is what they want. I really, you know, honestly, I don't know what sales figures for this, for DS are, you know, globally or in the China market in specific, in particular, I don't know. But I do know that it would be, it's a shame to see kind of DS diluted into this product that, you know, is very much following. It's not this, there's no longevity to this design. You know, it's not something that is timeless. It's not something that's going, you in 5 years, you're going to be like, hey, still great and fresh. I think it's going to age rather quickly because they're trying to follow too many trends.
I think it just looks unfinished. You know, there's so many.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, you had a front that you liked, you had a body side that you liked, and you had a rear that you liked, and just put it all together without really matching them, you know, without making sure that it all works together. And that's a shame. But let's be very, very honest. You know, the question is, you know, that comes from that. How long will we continue to see DS? You know, because I think it's somewhere lost in between, you know, Peugeot and Citroën, to be very, very honest. And the question is, you know, they haven't really been able to really set it onto that kind of premium level or the luxury level. So either they're going to change that and they're going to give it another shot, or they will literally just say, you know, we're gonna let it die out as its own brand, because I don't think it's profitable enough for them. It's not successful enough for them. I think, you know, we're both very, very on the same page here. I'd rather buy a Peugeot than a DS. You know, the Peugeot looks compared much better.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I wouldn't disagree. I mean, one thing that DS has always done well, and it's a shame that the exterior design, which is what ultimately draws you in the first place, isn't communicating that. But the interiors, I always find, are really very, very well done in terms of material use, in terms of colorways. I mean, you know, DS has always kind of used this pattern, you know, with be it on the seats or in, again, very graphic, right? Carried over into the interior. And I think the interior, particularly with like the HVAC buttons and all of that, kind of laid out around this lozenge-shaped IP vents are quite, you know, it's nice. It's novel. I haven't sat in a car. I haven't had to use those buttons. I don't know what it does, if it does work well ergonomically. But I like the fact that they're trying something new and that, you know, hopefully they'll find their own way. But as far as, you know, what they're doing in terms of exterior, it seems like they're chasing the trends too much, too often, and they really should just define a pure kind of, and again, French, if you will, quote-unquote, design identity, which would be, you know, followed throughout the range and communicated throughout the markets that they're targeting. You know, I mean, if China is the biggest market in the world, right? We all know that. We all know how important it is. But, you know, Europe it's very important to have that kind of foundation in Europe or in the US in order to become successful in China still.
Yeah.
You know, they still look to the West to see what it is that we're buying and what it is that we're doing before they jump on something. It's almost like, you know, they're seeing. So I mean, I do hope that the DS brand lives, because there are a hell of a lot of good people over there at that company. And, you know, they're all excellent designers on their own right. It's just, I think they need a bit more of a clear direction, you know.
Exactly. And in this kind of note, you just mentioned the PSA Designers, which of course is the parent company of DS. And let's move on to, you know, let's say people who have moved on to new positions very, very recently, and then we get into our main topic. But there's only one pretty much that, you know, is notably that we can talk about and that we want to talk about, which is actually, you know, Citroën Designs boss, Alexandre Malval, will be moving and heading up Daimler's Nice studio in the southwest of France, in the south of France, I'm sorry. And hey, what's not to like, you know, what's not to like about sun and having, you know, a little bit of sea around you?
Well, I think it's a bit more than that, but yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, it's you know, Nice, or indeed Sofia Antipolis, where this studio is a far cry from Paris. I think we could all agree that it's better for the spirits to be down there near the Mediterranean. But it's also a region that's experiencing a vast amount of growth in recent times, and you know, it's very similar to what happened in California with Toyota when they set up that first Calty design studio over there in 1973. And so Toyota's been in that very town, in, you know, very near Nice, also for a very long time with their ED Squared studio. So it's very much like there's a lot of things happening in that region, and it's driving some automakers down there, and there's more investment. Obviously, there's a lot of naval design going on. It's very near Cannes. There's loads of boat shows. And there's a lot of creativity, and Patrick Le Quimont has his, you know, design school thing going on down there. He lives down there as well. It's a creative milieu, which is a, you know, let's face it, a bit sleepier perhaps than some of the bigger metropolises, and creative centers like, you know, say London, for example. But it definitely has a great deal of appeal. And so it's very interesting to see that there's more studios opening down there. Now, as far as Alexandre Malval's move, I don't really know exactly what, you know, how the conversation came about, but I do know that it's a good move for him. If he wants to go and take advantage of being down there in that kind of creative environment because of, you know, the whole, I mean, every designer is looking for something new, right? They're always looking to kind of make a change. And he's been at PSA for 17 years. I mean, you know, he's been working for French companies pretty much since he left university, minus a very short stint, I believe, at Volkswagen. But it was, you know, it was his time, I think, to really move on, while still staying in France. But, I think it's a great opportunity for him. I'm really interested to see what it is that he does eventually come up with. But, you know, there's some really big plans for that Mercedes design studio. Obviously, like you mentioned, it's going to be a Daimler design studio. So they're going to be working on an assortment of different projects for brands within the Daimler group. So it's a very exciting time in his career, a very exciting time for Mercedes as well. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the fruits of that studio.
Yeah, it's good.
So congratulations to Alexandre anyway.
Absolutely agree and everything you said. And I think this is actually like a good kind of, you know, a kind of transition into a topic I wanted to discuss with you because this has kind of been on my mind for a little bit. And I don't really want to talk about advanced studios nowadays or at the moment for what we're going to talk about here. Because I have a little bit of the feeling with everything that happens, especially with the new electric, you know, let's say vibe that we have been experiencing over the past few years, that I'm always asking myself is, you know, are we somehow stuck in terms of car design? You know, is it just that, you know, I don't know, that car design nowadays is just putting up a skin, you know, on engineering, you know, that gives you a package? You know, how much influence does car design have nowadays? I mean, you know, we had this kind of time a few years ago where we've seen a lot of car designers becoming part of board members and stuff like that. But I had a little bit of the feeling that in terms of an evolution, and I'm not talking about a revolution, I'm talking really about an evolution of car design, it feels a little bit to me that we are stuck and that there's not really a lot of movement forward, yeah, especially with all this kind of, you know, electric types at the moment. And I want to really specifically talk about the production cars, because I think, you know, concepts, that's one thing, you know, they don't need to be feasible and stuff like that from, you know, in every instance. But in terms of production cars, you know, it seems you look outside, you've mentioned obviously, like, you know, the DS looking like a Chinese car, cars looking more and more similar. You know, what do you think? Do you think we are stuck, or do you think it's just a lack of skill at the moment? You know, obviously, like, I'm being very, very, you know, I'm exaggerating here, of course, nowadays in terms of the skill. But, you know, why do you think, you know, we don't have these kind of movements forward that we had from, like, you know, the 80s to the 90s or the 90s to the 2000s?
All right. Well, you want my honest answer?
Yes, always. You know, we're okay, always here. Okay. Honest, and straightforward.
I'm going to be frank and I'm going to be actually rather blunt. But I think a lot of companies these days are just kind of lacking the balls. that's flat out what I think. You know, it's I think, yes, you're absolutely right. I think we're kind of stuck in a rut where people aren't nearly as creative. Forget about the 60s and 70s, you know, 50s, when, you know, there really was an amazing kind of like, you know, fountain of creativity in the car design sphere. It's like, you know, the 70s, the 80s were rather dire, I mean, with the boxes and whatnot. But nonetheless, I still think there were some interesting concepts that came out of those times, you know, particularly like in 84 when you were, you know, the Bruno Espace and things like that, you know, new typologies I find are significantly lacking in today's world. And, you know, it's also carried on into more detail, like more into surface treatments, more into, it's like, you know, people, and I want to use this this analogy that Chris Bangle came up with and shared with me on a video some time ago. He was like, you know, talking about designers saying, oh, you know, complaining about the fact that they couldn't do anything new because it was like, you know, is, and his analogy was about music, you know, and, you know, how, you know, you can't come up with any, why can't you come up with any new music? Like, you know, like the 83 keys on the keyboard aren't sufficient anymore, you know, like there's plenty of kind of creative opportunity left. It's just that you have to be, you have to have the resilience and, you know, especially I think from like an upper management perspective, and this carries all the way through, to take a risk, to be bold, to go out there and say, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Sometimes it's not going to work. Sometimes, let's be honest, it's going to blow up in your face, but you never know. And I think the reason why we're seeing car design to be quote unquote stuck is because people aren't really necessarily taking those risks that, you know, perhaps you and I believe they should in order to kind of move the game on, you know. They found something that's working rather well. Marketing is like, hey, don't change it. Sales is saying, don't change it. We're selling a shit ton of these SUVs in the world. Why are we going to, you know, change a successful formula? And I think, you know, it's that is kind of what put people in this rut where, you know, now we can't kind of move forward. And I think in terms of technology, there's an incredible amount of innovation that we've yet to see from a lighting perspective. I mean, from an exterior design perspective, even just talking purely from an exterior design perspective, the technology that's currently available and coming to the fore and, you know, obviously not in automotive just yet, but shortly finding its way into automotive application is really going to enable and is enabling us to become more expressive and to show off creativity a bit more. It's just a question of whether or not companies are willing to kind of invest into something that, you know, is still fairly new, right? It's not, let's be honest. I mean, it's not like the fashion industry or even like the sporting goods industry, like the fashion industry, forget about it. I mean, it changes so quickly. Every season you've got something new. With the sporting goods industry, it's every year you've got something new. With the cars, it's like, you know, you kind of develop something, it takes you 5 years. Then, you know, you do a mid-cycle refresh. Then you kind of keep that on the shelves for another 3 years. And I mean, it's a different kind of pace. And I think at the moment we're seeing companies just being too timid to go into experiencing and rather implementing something that is going to, you know, create something new and something inspiring. I think it's just a question of risk. And that is a real shame because at the moment everyone is also talking about experience. And that is really how you're going to change people's perceptions, increase that level of experience that people can have with a vehicle, and indeed that emotional connection, which is what everyone is striving for.
From, you know, exactly what you have just mentioned, just kind of following on that, is because everything is, you know, in this kind of globalized world, it's always about sales numbers, it's about profit, of course. I think a lot of times this is also undermining the creativity, especially when we talk about designers. You know, we've both spoken to a number of design managers, and they said, look, it's kind of, we're asking for the guys to develop something and to deliver something. But maybe a lot of people don't want to do, you know, some stuff on the side anymore. Or, you know, some people are just not interested because the other projects that they're working on are so demanding. But we all know that some of the best projects, even on production levels, have come out of side projects, people that were just doodling around, you know, people just using an hour of the day and just doing some kind of stuff rather than working on, on all those kind of production models. And I think that might be a little bit of an extra in that as well, is, you know, the kind of way on like how to work and like, you know, the deliverings, you know, deliveries and, you know, key performance indicators and all these kind of, you know, fancy words in the, in nowadays work culture. They have become much, much more important. And in the end, you know, let's be very, very honest, for a lot of people, design, and a lot of companies in particular, design is almost like an internal supplier. I think, you know, oftentimes the respect for the design department is not given on the level it should be. Oftentimes it's not on the same level as engineering, you know, let's say IT, including all the software architecture and so on and so on. And maybe, you know, that's kind of holding a lot of people back with going this extra mile. You know, it's really that kind of situation to say, hey, how far do we want to go? You know, what is the kind of new thing that we want to do? Do we have, you know, a little bit extra that we can, you know, do something new here or there, or, you know, put in a little bit of later evenings, like, you know, you check out with your card, but you stay on a little bit longer because, you know, a bunch of guys have those kind of ideas. And that might be a little bit of the environment as well. But also, of course, you know, engineering packages and stuff like that, they've become, you know, I don't want to say restrictive, because I don't know, I think it was Chris Bangle as well. It's just like, you know, you can be very, very creative in a very restrictive area. You just need to want to do it. Don't find excuses. Just do it. You know, it's very easy nowadays to say, just like, oh yeah, but the package was crap. Yeah. You know, it's just we hear that quite often. But you know, I want to challenge obviously here a little bit as well. So don't get me wrong, everybody is listening to this, but you know, are you always asking yourself, you know, am I doing the best possible thing that I can do with the package that I have? Or is it just, you know, I'm doing this because I'm used to doing that. And I think it's a little bit of a mix in between. Yeah. And I'm going to be very, very curious to see who's going to be the first one to break that mold. Yeah. To really, and not break the mold and just like, you know, one car, but really set a new trend. And I hope it's not going to be those SUV coupes that we have seen recently, because that's just a little bit of an, you know, it's an SUV just looking a little bit differently, but really something new. Maybe MPEVs can be something like that, you know, seven seaters again in the future, you know, kind of bringing them back to life. That's going to be really interesting. And I hope that, you know, we will see some very, very cool things coming out, to kind of get us out of this rut, because I think, you know, look into the Audi. I mean, yeah, everybody, you know, it's like, oh, cool, it's an electric Audi. But in terms of design, it's still same old, you know, it might be a little bit fresher in terms of details and stuff like that. And again, I'm not asking for a revolution. I'm asking for proper evolution, you know, in moving forward. And that's, you know, that's where I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see who's going to be the first one, who can be a trendsetter. And maybe it is a Chinese company. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, just to kind of touch on a couple of things that you've said, I think very much it's, there still is a divide within some companies where engineering is put forward, or, you know, some other side of the business is pushed forward, and delegating, or indeed instructing design to do certain things. So whether it's marketing or engineering or whatever, if you look at the companies that are really successful right now, they are the ones that allow design to have that kind of space to breathe and to kind of influence then, you know, certain aspects of, I'm not saying design needs to be at the top of everything. I think there needs to be a clearer kind of design or strategy rather within these separate areas within a company, where it's not one above the other, not one dictating certain things to another, or indeed, you know, it's a more of a collaborative effort into designing a vehicle that, and indeed a line of vehicles that is, you know, very harmonious in terms of like moving the yardstick forward. I think that's really what's needed.
100% agree, and I think we would be very, very interested in obviously hearing in your opinion on that one. And of course, I mean, the designers will always say, like, we never have enough freedom and stuff like that. But, you know, obviously share a little bit of your experience with, you know, with us in those regards. And
absolutely. Yeah. I was about to say that, because, I mean, you know, we're, we're just two guys sharing our opinions over here. It's like, you know, we do see certain things going on in the world. And, you know, we're in this, you know, as much as anyone can be. But it's important to also know that, you know, our viewpoints are exactly that. You know, it's everyone's kind of thinking about ways to improve. And, you know, I'll be the first to say I don't know everything. There's a lot of stuff I don't know. But, I, you know, it's always interesting to open up that discourse and to have that conversation and see, you know, what it is. You know, I mean, please weigh in. Let us know your thoughts, you know, on any of these topics that we've discussed today. Or indeed, if you have suggestions for something that you'd like to hear us discuss in the future, you know, by all means, you know, get in touch. Let us know. You can hit us up on all the social media, your usual social media channels. And by all means, you know, do participate, help us engage in some conversation.
And, you know, to kind of, let's say, you know, we're already an hour in, you know, it's like we always get over this kind of hour. We're always aiming for just about an hour, but it's always a little bit more. But just a few things from this perspective. First of all, you know, new jobs that we have available at the moment, you know, that if you are looking for something new, feel free to apply. I think the very, very strong impact at the moment we see in user interface, user experience, HMI design, we've talked about this a few weeks ago, still going very, very strong, especially for people with color and trim.
Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, we can always repeat interior. Everything that is pretty much within the interior.
Yes, that's right. Mostly interior rather. But, you know, we do have some exterior positions available as well. But, you know, most of everything that you've mentioned, of course, you know, we'd like to speak to some, some experienced interior designers, also UI, UX designers and color and trim designers, because, you know, again, moving on with this personalization trend, it's something that is very much of the time. Yeah. And that's what everyone is looking for. And that's what we'd like to speak to some candidates that are looking for, some roles and some positions in that area.
Exactly. And a quick update, from my side, because we spoke about, our lovely charity auction, in the last episode of the Gestalten podcast. The reason why it's not online yet, we're waiting for the approval because the charity in Germany needs to be approved to a certain kind of degree. And it needs to be confirmed that the money is going in, to where we want it to go. So we're waiting for that. This should come up in the next few days. And as soon as that's obviously up, then we will share the link with all of you. And most excitingly, I think this is our last episode before the Paris Motor Show. And we will actually be at the Paris Motor Show. We will be doing a podcast very, very likely on the Wednesday of the Paris Motor Show. If that's going to be on site or if that's going to be like, you know, in our hotel or, you know, wherever we're going to stay, that remains to be seen. But also, we will be doing some live videos. We will be doing some, you know, maybe Facebook Live, Instagram Live, those kind of things as well. So, you know, do follow us for the Paris Motor Show on social media accounts such as Form Trends, which is on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Eric, what else? What else do you have? Did I miss anything?
No, I think you got the most of them. But I mean, we'll be doing that on Concept House accounts as well. I mean, we'll be sharing content back and forth. We're just going to flood the internet with cool design stuff and, you know, pictures, like you say, you know, we'll be doing some live videos from these events as well. It's all going to be, very, very intense. So do join us. Join us for the ride. And the podcast thing is still very much up in the air, but we will aim to get you something out ASAP from Paris, because it's certainly going to be an interesting show, regardless of the fact that not many, a very large amount, I should say, manufacturers are choosing to sit this one out. It's still going to be a very interesting show, without a doubt. And there'll be a lot to talk about regarding. And we always find stuff to talk about anyways.
Well, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see that. But if you have any special requests already up front for the Paris show, or if you want to meet us, we're going to be there on both press days. So, and probably yes. we'll be arriving on the 1st as well, which is the Monday, and just kind of prepare everything for the Tuesday. So even, you know, if that is something of interest to you, please do shoot us a message on social media, such as, you know, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, yep. you know, whatever pretty much you can think of. We are somewhere on there. And
we'll respond to you. I met up with somebody in Italy yesterday, you know, just because he shot me a message on Instagram. He happened to be in the same city I was, so we met up for a beer. It was really super cool. So yeah, by all means, you know, drop us a line. Maybe we can see one another face to face. It's always nice to meet you guys and to have a chat. So yeah, just shoot us a line on any one of these social medias that you use. Likely, you know, we're on them, and we will get back to you.
And with that, we are actually at the end of Gestalt Podcast, episode 8.
Yeah.
Eric, as always, you know, thanks for being part of this. And
great pleasure, yeah, you know. It's good. And, it's always good fun.
And fortunately, I just want to add that we're not recording next week, because obviously, you know, in Munich we have the Oktoberfest starting down here. So as you can imagine,
other priorities.
Oktoberfest season is very, very big down here. So Paris is going to be the next one. That's almost at the end of Oktoberfest. So yeah, we promise you we will be completely sober and completely back in shape after Oktoberfest season. So thanks for listening. Thanks, Eric, for taking the time as well, as always. And you will hear actually from us in about a couple of weeks time at or after the Paris Motor Show.
Yep. So thanks, guys. Thanks again, Martin. And you guys take care. We'll see you on the next one.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.